This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the show. It's Mira Sivasodhi. In the lead up to the 22nd Winter Olympics in Sochi, Russia, leaders of a few countries have publicly declared that they will not be attending the opening ceremony on the 6th of February. Will these snubs prove to be anything beyond more symbolic gestures? Well, we're discussing the politics of sports with Elina Noor about this, and we'll examine the history of boycotts and controversy. She's the Assistant Director of Foreign Policy and Security Studies at Institute of Strategic and International Studies, Malaysia. Welcome to the show, Elina.
Thank you.
Welcome back. We're always talking about, always inevitably talk about the US when you're in the studio with us.
Don't know if that's a good thing or not.
We will somehow, you know, weave in the US. I mean, of course, they are the first Olympics held in Russia. Since then, the US boycotted in 1980, the Moscow Games. And so this is the first Olympics that will be held again on Russian soil.
Yes.
And already there has been so much controversy.
Yes.
I think Germany's president was the first person to say that they will politically boycott the Winter Olympics. Who else has boycotted it so far, Elina?
Well, there's been a bit of a pushback and a bit of a 180 on that, because after the German leader decided that he would boycott it and President Obama decided he would not go, I think David Cameron and French leader François Hollande decided, you know what, the sport is not about politics. So we'll leave it at that. We'll leave sports as it is and politics as it is. So there's been a bit of a U-turn on that among some of the European countries.
Okay, but is the US still going?
President Obama is not going, but he's sending a quote-unquote VIP delegation comprising some very publicly gay former sports athletes.
Billie Jean King
being one of them, yes.
Exactly. We'll come to why we're talking about all these sexuality issues, which is linked to sports. Sometimes I wonder what the link really is, you know. But, you know, Elina, I think one of the things that comes to mind with this whole Olympics is it's costing a whole lot of money.
Right.
I think almost, $8 billion, maybe even more, US dollars. But Vladimir Putin, of course, he hopes it will be the most expensive games in Olympic history.
Mm-hmm.
And they're hoping that it will validate his role as Russia's supreme leader.
Mm-hmm.
They're hoping it will unite the country behind him and show how far it has come since the Soviet days.
Yes.
Do you think there's much truth to that? I mean, this is really the politics of sports, you know.
Right, yes. Well, I think every nation that hosts an Olympiad aspires to have some political weight, you know, marked on the international stage once they host those games. But you're right, President Putin has actually said that the Sochi Games are supposed to sort of pull Russia out of the doldrums since the days of the Soviet Union. But of course, you know, the cynical view of that is, well, it's really his games.
Yes.
It's the Putin games, because he, if you recall, 7 years ago, he made a personal bid at the IOC for Sochi to win the bid. And he spoke in English and French, which shocked a lot of people. So it was a very personal thing for him. And he is out to make a mark for Russia, I believe, and following, you know, his successes with Snowden, first of all, and then what happened with Syria, you know, it tempered sort of the tensions in Syria. You remember his famous op-ed in the New York Times, which was really quite a good op-ed, I thought. So he's coming off the back of those successes or achievements from a Russian standpoint. And so if at all, you know, it does underscore his role in the games and his role as the leader of Russia, trying to bring Russia up to that same level as the other major powers in the world.
So his legacy is very much tied to the success of this
game.
The stakes are high, isn't it,
yes,
Elina?
Yes.
If it doesn't, then he has everything to lose, really.
I suppose so. But, you know, not everything hinges on the Winter Games.
That's right.
Not as big as the Summer Games.
That's right. The rest of the world isn't making it
right
very much easier for him. But let's go into some of the reasons as to why, you know, there have been challenges.
Yes.
As far as this is concerned. And I think one of them is, of course, the whole homophobic attitude mm-hmm. towards the games. Demonstrations over gay propaganda laws
right.
is one of the reasons why some people are boycotting. I think the German president said he felt it was that Russians had violated human rights and mm-hmm. harassment of opposition. Right. Is that enough? Is that a good reason?
Well, you know, I don't think political boycotts really work. You look at the history of a boycott, boycotts of the previous Olympiads, and they haven't really changed anything much, have they? You go back to 1980 games when the US boycotted the Moscow games. Mm-hmm. Well, it's not like Russia immediately pulled out of Afghanistan after that. Sorry, the Soviet Union at the time. They didn't immediately pull out of Afghanistan, and the US's lack of participation was purportedly to protest the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan. So I don't really believe in political boycotting of sports, but I'm sure we'll get more into that later on.
We will, we certainly will. But we have a question from Sharon via Twitter, and he's saying, why doesn't Malaysia boycott the ASEAN Games in Myanmar? He says, I recall the massacre of the Rohingyas at that
yes.
time. You know, we could have if we wanted to.
Yes. And then I suppose following up on that is, you know, what we just talked about, would that actually stop the massacre of Rohingyas in Myanmar? Sure, it would send a message. But would a sporting event be the right forum to send such a message?
That's right. Well, there has been some other, push. Putin
yes.
has actually done a whole lot of other things to make it more friendly for people to actually be a part of these games.
Right.
One of which is, of course, he has relaxed a ban on protests in Sochi and mm-hmm. allowed some of his biggest critics out of prison.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, some of them being the former oil tycoon, mm-hmm. Mikhail Khodorkovsky,
yes.
as well as members of the Pussy Riot protest group.
Right.
He's gone to great lengths for his legacy, hasn't he?
I sense some undertones in that statement.
Your thoughts on that?
Well, as has been pointed out in the media, I mean, the releases were going to be done anyway. He just brought the dates forward, so it was pretty convenient. And he has set up, I believe, a special area for demonstrations to take place in Sochi. And I think the protests the political boycotts at first were really not so... I wouldn't call it an anti-gay legislation because the legislation is worded quite vaguely.
It was an amendment, isn't it?
It was something about it was a ban on the propagation of unnatural sexual acts towards minors, or something
That's
along
right.
those lines.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the protests were about that, but also I think about the larger human rights abuses in Russia that are alleged. So, I think, you know, yes, he has done some symbolic gestures to, push for the Sochi Games and its popularity. But I guess if you fall on the side of strong human rights advocacy, it's not really enough, is it?
No, it's not. Let's just look at Beijing. Yeah, they had similar nationalistic objectives for the 2008 mm-hmm. Olympics, Summer Olympics. Did the Games sort of improve their standing domestically and internationally?
It's hard to say because in the run-up to the Beijing Games, there was a lot of construction done for the games itself, but also as a way to speed China's developmental process. So it was an external push on structural reforms, talking physical infrastructure reforms, but also as a way to elevate China in the eyes of the world. And that itself was a push for the Chinese to sort of, you know, behave better. If you remember those statements about, you know,
yes.
cautioning citizens not to spit here and there and all that. So in a sense, it was their debut to the world, right? Has it worked? Maybe, to a certain extent. Pollution is probably worse than ever. Nothing much has been done about that. And there is still a very large divide in income inequality in China.
That's right. I think 100 million Chinese live on less than $1 a day.
Yeah, it's really bad.
And it costs them like 800 yeah. million US dollars for the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
then you wonder, you know, and economists argue We always think there is an economic benefit to the country when you host games like these.
Right.
But economists are skeptical about the economic benefits of hosting mega events such as the Olympics or even the World Cup. These doubts, are they even shared by policymakers?
You know, in the euphoria to trying to win the bid, I think a lot of leaders tend to just override that thought. As with the Sochi Games, I think the initial budget was something like $12 billion, but it's gone up in cost extensively to something like $50 billion, and making it the most expensive games, as you pointed out. And it's even more expensive than the Beijing Games, which were much bigger.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that cost. There's a monetary cost to it, but there's also a social cost to it because, as with Beijing, a lot of dwellers were pushed out of their homes to make way for the construction of the Olympic Village. And I hear the same things are going on in Brazil right now for the World Cup. So there are the intangible costs that, you know, cannot be measured adequately apart from the economic benefits or costs that these games bring.
But then again, you know, the city, if you look at the city of Atlanta and the state of Georgia, they spent about $1.58 billion in 1996 for the Olympics, which created about 24,000 permanent jobs under their most optimistic scenario. Is that justified at all? I mean, employment is created at the end of the day
as
well.
Right. But then employment is created, but for how long? The U.S. just is slowly crawling out of its recession. So the jobs that were created in 96 in Atlanta, you know, have they still been there all this time? Have they been affected by the global financial crisis? I think the measure is whether those jobs are long-term or not. And it's really hard to tell because of several cyclical factors that are sometimes out of government's control.
Mm-hmm. So are you then saying hosting the games in and itself has no impact on the nation's fundamentals or trade?
Oh, no. I think I'm not a trade expert, but I'm sure it brings huge economic benefits at the time. I'm just saying there are also social costs that go along with that. But definitely, you know, it really boosts the morale of a nation. And all the trade benefits that go along with receiving foreign tourists that come to watch these games.
We'll find out more about how Alina feels or about Malaysia, who hosted the Commonwealth Games, and how we benefited or not from that hosting of those games. If you have a question for her, send it through 016-201-9000 or tweet BFM Radio.
This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. If you have just joined us, it is Meera Sivasuthi. With me is Alina Noor, Assistant Director of Foreign Policy and Security Studies at ICS Malaysia. We're discussing the politics of sports, in particular the Sochi Games, and the history of political boycotts of these games. You know, Alina, it seems like the biggest sufferers of boycotts like these are the athletes, really. And I just read a statement by Michael Phelps about, you know, these boycotts. And he says to them, it doesn't make a difference at all because they're all out to, you know, do their best in the sports,
right.
And it only just hampers everything for them.
Yes.
But what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, that's provided the athletes actually get to compete, right? There have been occasions when government leaders have unilaterally decided that they would boycott particular games, and the athletes have been disappointed at the last minute. And these athletes have spent their lifetime training to compete at such a high level event, and you can imagine how dismayed they must be. I mean, for some of them, if they're on the verge of retirement and there's no further opportunity to compete, that's the end of their career, no competition at all. And so I think there is this slow realization that if you want to make a statement, you have a symbolic boycott in the way that maybe President Obama has decided to do. He's not attending the opening ceremony of the Sochi Games, but the U.S. is sending its largest ever contingent to Sochi in the history of the Winter Games. Likewise, Australia is sending its largest contingent in its history of the Winter Games. So I think there's this recognition that the athletes have to be rewarded with competition for all the training and just all that they've dedicated their lives to. But if political leaders want to make a statement, then they can choose not to attend, you know, the grandiosity of the ceremony.
Do you foresee problems with the U.S. coming to Russian soil after all this time? I mean, they did go through the Cold War.
Yes.
And, you know, there's this talk about Black Widows, and there has been some terror, attacks by Black Widows in the last couple of weeks, I think.
Yes.
And safety is of huge concern. Is there reason to be concerned? I mean, I wouldn't blame the US, actually.
Right.
I would be nervous as well.
Yes. I think the US has warned its athletes not to be visibly American, not to wear any attire that's associated with the US outside
of the Games Village.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And sure, it's justified. But, a lot of the terrorist threats that have emanated are really from groups that are domestic and are protesting against what they perceive to be the injustices within the Russian system, whether it's against Muslims in Russia or for other causes. So, yes, there is a terrorist threat, but I think that cuts across nationalities. The U.S. maybe because of its Cold War history with Russia, the USSR, might be a special target, but I don't think any more so than any other athletes.
I mean, the Pentagon is ready to deploy air and naval assets, moving their warships into the Black Sea. Russia has rejected their offers. Yes. Where is all of this going to go at the end of the day? Interesting Winter Olympics.
Yes, well, you would think that this would be an occasion to actually patch up a little and cooperate militarily, or at least from a law enforcement security standpoint. But I suppose that grandstanding will always be there. And of course, there's the lingering suspicion, which is a legacy of the Cold War. When you're dealing with military capabilities, it's always very sensitive. So that suspicion definitely, I think, would undermine any real defense cooperation.
And Beijing had similar problems, during the Summer Olympics in 2008. What did they do to sort of circumvent international pressure? I mean, they were pressured for their support of the Sudanese regime, violent crackdowns on Tibetan protesters, and there was also some aspect of media censorship among some of it. How did they handle that?
I think they handled that quite separately. Human Rights Watch, for example, has a guideline for journalists on how to report in places like Beijing or Moscow or Sochi, as the case now. You go to the website, you see a list of guidelines on how to report in countries with human rights problems as they see it. But a lot of the world, when they tune in to sporting events, what they're interested in is the athleticism of these sporting events. Politics is separate, and that's how governments also handle it. Beijing handled their political problems separately, and President Putin has also done so up to this point. Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, viewership will still be there, and all the athletes and spectators care about is the level of competition at these games.
Yeah. I mean, even with Rio, if you watch TV, you see documentary after documentary about, the streets of Rio and the problem they have with the drug trade and things like that. I've never seen so much emphasis on the drug trade. I mean, it's to a very large extent, I don't know whether it's fair or not to bring up these issues at a time like this. I mean, it does exist. It has existed all this time.
Sure, yeah.
But to bring it up at a time like this, and when governments are trying their level best to make the best of everything, in my opinion, it's not very fair, is that?
I agree. I mean, you have to pick and choose your forum. If you're going to protest against something, then pick the right forum to do so. Mm-hmm. There are other avenues to protest.
Of course. And in the Berlin Olympics in 1936 in Nazi Germany, it was the first time it was a televised Olympics. Mm. Was it a game changer in terms of its reach and influence because of that?
I wouldn't call it a game changer. I think what was significant about it was the fact that African Americans were competing in those games, and Jesse Owens won 4 gold medals at that event. So it was sort of a slap in the face to, the racial supremacy theory of Hitler at the time. Mm-hmm. But in no way was it a game changer to what was going on in Germany at the time.
Okay. The 1936 Games in Berlin, 1954 Games in Melbourne, they were boycotted by a number of nations. Should the IOC shoulder some of the blame for awarding games to countries mired in conflict or with less than stellar human rights records?
There's a flip side to looking at that. It might be a form of pressure on these countries to reform. It won't resolve any of the issues wholesale, but having the eyes of the world on them might pressure some form of change within those countries. So I think it'd be unfair to blame the IOC. Additionally, there's a lot of politicking that goes on in picking the winners of these Olympic bids. So there's that consideration as well. All the little deals that are struck in the back rooms of the IOC.
The wine and the dining.
That's right.
And probably all plays a role as well.
Yes.
Coming back to Malaysia, I mean, we hosted the Commonwealth Games back in 1998.
Yes.
Did it leave us with a desirable outcome? I mean, the first thing that comes to my mind, and, you know, I was very interested in, you know, the Commonwealth Games, hockey and stuff.
Yes.
But what has left me terribly disappointed is the state of the Games Village.
Yes.
The stadiums. You know, we invested so much money in all that infrastructure.
Absolutely.
We've not maintained it.
No, we haven't. And
I can't say much about the level of sports in this country either.
No, it's a very visceral reminder of what was and what is now, isn't it? The state of the stadium and how now it's just used for concerts and occasional other big events. But a Commonwealth Games that we hosted in 1998 was significant because it was the first time it was hosted in Asia, and it was the first time that team sports were introduced at the Commonwealth Games. And if you recall, at the time, it was during the Asian financial crisis. So there was that backdrop. In terms of legacy, you're right. I can't think of how much it's done for Malaysian sports or the prestige of Malaysia. I remember being at the Games. I was really excited.
Very excited.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then after it was all over, that sort of faded. And, as you pointed out, there's a very visual reminder of that faded glory. So, yes, hosting a major sporting event is great for a country, but what happens after is equally important.
Yeah. Do you see that happening for Russia as well? Will the impact be minimal and forgotten soon after?
It depends on many things. One, on the success, assuming everything goes off without a hitch in Sochi. But I don't think the impact will be as huge, perhaps, as President Putin hopes it will be. People will tune into the games, still watch the games, and then once the games are over, there might be occasional tourists to Sochi who remember it from these games.
Yes.
But in terms of political weightage of Russia, I'm not sure how much the games will actually contribute to that.
Will make a difference.
Right.
So we really should put politics aside, don't we?
Yeah.
We really, really should. I mean, don't ruin the sports for, the athletes and everyone else who's
waiting
to watch all of this. In general, Elena, would you have concerns or anything that you want to share with us in regards to the sports and the politics of sports?
Yeah, I completely agree. Politics should be, I don't think it can be completely alienated from sports, but at least minimized. I was very fortunate to have sat on a panel with the former Olympic skater Michelle Kwan to discuss the role of sports and how it empowers people, especially women and girls. And that's what sports should be used for. To empower children at a very young age, and just to empower people of all ages and genders, regardless of discrimination. I mean, that's what the Olympics is about, isn't it? It's about fair competition, regardless of where you come from or what you are, really. And I think we should return to the basics of that.
The objectives of the Olympics, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Thank you very much for joining us today. That was Elena Noor, Assistant Director of Foreign Policy and Security Studies of ICES Malaysia, on the politics of sports, the Sochi Games, and the history of political boycotts on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.